Chapter 103. It was late afternoon when the London sun broke through and the city began to dry. Bezu Fache felt weary as he emerged from the interrogation room and hailed a cab. Sir Teabing had vociferously proclaimed his innocence, and yet from his incoherent rantings about the Holy Grail, secret documents, and mysterious brotherhoods, Fache suspected the wily historian was setting the stage for his lawyers to plead an insanity defense.
Sure, Fache thought. Insane.
Teabing had displayed ingenious precision in formulating a plan that protected his innocence at every turn. His listening post was in the one place a man with polio could not reach. He exploited both the Vatican and Opus Dei, two groups that turned out to be completely innocent. His dirty work had been carried out unknowingly by a fanatical monk and a desperate bishop. And the lone man privy to Teabing's true identity was conveniently dead of an allergic reaction.
Hardly the handiwork of someone lacking mental faculties, Fache thought.
The information coming from Calais out of Chateau Villette suggested that Teabing's cunning ran so deep that Fache himself might even learn from it. To successfully hide bugs in some of Paris's most powerful offices, the British historian had turned to the Greeks.
Trojan horses.
Some of Teabing's intended targets received lavish gifts of artwork. Others unwittingly bid at auctions in which Teabing had placed specific lots. In Saunier's case, the curator had received a dinner invitation to Chateau Villette to discuss the possibility of Teabing funding a new Da Vinci wing at the Louvre. Saunier's invitation had contained an innocuous postscript expressing fascination with a robotic knight that Saunier was rumored to have built.
Bring him to dinner, Teabing had suggested.
Saunier apparently had done just that, and left the knight unattended long enough for Remy Legaludec to make one inconspicuous addition. Now, sitting in the back of the cab, Fache closed his eyes.
One more thing to attend to before I return to Paris.
The Parkside Hospital recovery room was sunny.
You've impressed us all, the nurse said, smiling down at him. Nothing short of miraculous.
Bishop Aringarosa gave a weak smile.
I have always been blessed.
The nurse finished puttering, leaving the bishop alone. The sunlight felt welcome and warm on his face. Last night had been the darkest night of his life. Despondently, he thought of Silas, whose body had been found in the park.
Please forgive me, my son.
Aringarosa had longed for Silas to be part of his glorious plan. Last night, however, Aringarosa had received a call from Bezu Fache, questioning the bishop about his apparent connection to a nun who had been murdered in Saint-Sulpice. Aringarosa realized the evening had taken a horrifying turn. News of the four additional murders transformed his horror to anguish.
Silas, what have you done?
Unable to reach the teacher, the bishop knew he had been cut loose.
Used.
The only way to stop the horrific chain of events he had helped put in motion was to confess everything to Fache, and from that moment on, Aringarosa and Fache had been racing to catch up with Silas before the teacher persuaded him to kill again. Feeling bone-weary, Aringarosa closed his eyes and listened to the television coverage of the arrest of a prominent British knight, Sir Lee Teabing.
The teacher laid bare for all to see.
Teabing had caught wind of the Vatican's plans to excommunicate Opus Dei. He had chosen Aringarosa as the perfect pawn in his plan.
After all, who more likely to leap blindly after the Holy Grail than a man like myself with everything to lose? The Grail would have brought enormous power to anyone who possessed it.
Sir Teabing had protected his identity shrewdly, feigning a French accent and a pious heart, and demanding as payment the one thing he did not need, money. Aringarosa had been far too eager to be suspicious. The price tag of 20 million euro was paltry when compared with the prize of obtaining the Grail, and with the Vatican's separation payment to Opus Dei, the finances had worked nicely.
The blind see what they want to see.
Teabing's ultimate insult, of course, had been to demand payment in Vatican bonds, such that if anything went wrong, the investigation would lead to Rome.
I'm glad to see you are well, Bishop.
Aringarosa recognized the gruff voice in the doorway, but the face was unexpected. Stern, powerful features, slicked back hair, and a broad neck that strained against his uniform.
Captain Fash? Aringarosa said.
The compassion and concern the captain had shown for Aringarosa's plight last night had conjured images of a far gentler physique. The captain approached the bed and hoisted a familiar heavy black briefcase onto a chair.
I believe this belongs to you.
Aringarosa looked at the briefcase filled with bonds and immediately looked away, feeling only shame.
Yes. Thank you.
He paused while working his fingers across the seam of his bedsheet, then continued.
Captain, I have been giving this deep thought, and I need to ask a favor of you.
Of course.
The families of those in Paris who Silas...
He paused, swallowing the emotion.
I realize no sum could possibly serve as sufficient restitution, and yet, if you could be kind enough to divide the contents of this briefcase among them, the families of the deceased...
Fash's dark eyes studied him a long moment.
A virtuous gesture, Bishop. I will see to it your wishes are carried out.
A heavy silence fell between them. On the television, a lean French police officer was giving a press conference in front of a sprawling mansion. Fash saw who it was and turned his attention to the screen.
Lieutenant Collet, a BBC reporter said, her voice accusing, last night your captain publicly charged two innocent people with murder. Will Robert Langdon and Sophie Neveu be seeking accountability from your department? Will this cost Captain Fash his job?
Lieutenant Collet's smile was tired but calm.
It is my experience that Captain Bezoufarch seldom makes mistakes. I have not yet spoken to him on this matter, but knowing how he operates, I suspect his public manhunt for Eugène Neveu and Mr. Langdon was part of a ruse to lure out the real killer.
The reporters exchanged surprised looks.
Whether or not Monsieur Langdon and Eugène Neveu were willing participants in the sting, I do not know. Captain Fash tends to keep his more creative methods to himself. All I can confirm at this point is that the captain has successfully arrested the man responsible and that Mr. Langdon and Agent Neveu are both innocent and safe.
Fash had a faint smile on his lips as he turned back to Aringarosa.
A good man, that Collet. I believe he has been a lieutenant long enough.
Fash ran his hand back over his forehead, slicking back his hair, as he gazed down at Aringarosa.
Bishop, I must return to Paris. But before I go, there is one unfortunate final matter. Your impromptu flight to London. You bribed a pilot to change course. In doing so, you broke a number of international laws.
Aringarosa slumped. I was desperate.
Yes, as was the pilot when my men interrogated him.
Fash reached in his pocket and produced a purple amethyst ring with a familiar hand-tooled miter crozier applique. Aringarosa felt tears welling as he slipped the ring back on his finger.
You have been so kind.
He held out his hand and clasped Fash's.
Thank you.
Fash waved off the gesture, walking to the window and gazing out at the city, his thoughts obviously far away. When he turned, there was an uncertainty about him.
Bishop, where do you go from here?
Aringarosa had been asked the exact same question as he left Castel Gandolfo the night before.
I suspect my path is as uncertain as yours.
Yes, Fash paused. I suspect I will be retiring early.
Aringarosa smiled.
A little faith can do wonders, Captain. A little faith.